Vacuum on at 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. Vacuum on at 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Welcome to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. My name is Grant Cameron. I'm just going to do a little bit of a discussion on the Greer documentary that ran on July the 4th. Can say to start, there's really nothing surprising about what was in the documentary. He has been saying all the things that he said in the documentary for the last 30 years. Now, a lot of people, I think, are going to be doing panels on this. I was asked to be on one. I chose not to be involved, as I'm sure most of the panels are going to turn into urinating contests. Stephen Greer has a very distinct personality that has made him very unpopular with a lot of people. I really don't want to get into the politics of Stephen Greer, but I thought it was important to put down my understanding of what I saw in the documentary. And if I can add anything to my position and how it fits in. Many people have not been around long enough to know how Greer was the Elizondo of the UFO world in 2001 when he did his disclosure panel that jammed the National Press Club room with reporters. Apparently there was more reporters in that room than there had been since Ronald Reagan had been in the room. So this was a big deal. He was walking on water. He couldn't do anything wrong. And over the years, things have chipped away, and now there's a lot of people who love to sort of attack his position on different things. I remember trying to call in or to dial in to the broadcast of the 2001 disclosure conference. Most people don't realize at that point there really was not an internet. There was old telephone modems that you'd have to dial in, try to get a signal. There was only so many calls that they could take. And it actually, the first day of the conference was, first hour of the conference was, he says, was completely blocked. I took the day off to listen. Now, the interpretation I got and others got at the time was the reason that the first hour went down was there were so many people who had all tried to get online to listen to these disclosure witnesses. It was a big thing in the UFO community, even though at that point it was still sort of chat boards. There really wasn't the internet that we know today. As I recall, there was some sort of record set for the highest number of people ever trying to access one event on the internet at one time. So you got to remember, that's where Stephen Greer comes from. He was very, very prominent at that time. He had all the witnesses. And as he points out in the documentary, he gets very upset with Leslie Kane, who was actually working with him at the time. And the book that she had is basically his disclosure witnesses, the big famous book that she wrote. And Stephen Greer is still upset about that, figuring that she was in the group and then turned on him and took all the witnesses and took off and wrote a book about them. So you got to remember, he had a lot of very high-level witnesses. He had given this briefing to James Woosley at the CIA. That turned out to be true. Everybody said at the time, no, he hadn't given this briefing. He did. He said he had briefed the the Defense Intelligence Agency head. That turned out to be true. The assistant head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff was briefed. Everybody denied that. That turned out to be true. So despite Stephen Greer's very sort of forward way he talks, most of the stuff, my impression is that he has put out has turned out to be exactly the way he described it, except he puts a little bit more of a spin on it as to how he interprets it. In the book Managing Magic, I talk about the messiahs of the UFO world, and Stephen Greer was one of the messiahs, I consider, of the UFO world. They come and they attract huge followings. Then some skeleton is unearthed and everybody gets very angry, and they move on and latch onto another messiah who they believe will bring the message to them and save them from the evil forces of cover-up that have been running the show. So at the moment, Lou Elizondo is the messiah, but if history repeats itself, that will not last forever. Again, I decided not to go on any panels because I think most of the panels are going to be click circuses where there's going to be huge numbers of people tuning in, and there's going to be a lot of, fighting and that kind of stuff don't really want to be involved with. The first thing I want to mention about the documentary, and this is one of the big criticisms that people bring up against Stephen Greer, is the fact that the documentary is free. I'm not sure how much it cost him to put this documentary together, but I'm sure it wasn't $9.95. This is a lot of money that he put into this thing. And Stephen's always been criticized as trying to make money on the UFO field. And I've always considered if there are people running around that high-level doctors and people who want entertainment and they want to go out and skywatch, and if they're willing to pay whatever Stephen Greer is charging, so be it. I mean, people have their right to do what they want, and he is not forcing anybody to go there. And so it's kind of weird that he put this out for free, and I would bet to say that the people who will be criticizing him now for this documentary are people who are now forcing people to pay to hear, interviews and podcasts and stuff like that. The world has changed since this last couple of months. I've noticed a lot of people are now deciding that we're going to get rich on this thing and we're going to have paid streams or requests for donations because the numbers are starting to go up. More and more people are getting interested. And it appears like a lot of people are going to try to cash in on this thing. What I did notice, he had made a number of similar arguments to what I've been saying for a long time. And I thought the documentary made the point he wanted, and it was well presented. So you may not agree with what he's saying, but he is saying, as I said, he's been saying the same thing for 30 years. And he put the argument out pretty clearly. It's the same argument that he's been using. And I thought it was fairly well done. His basic argument is, and now he brings up TTSA, but his basic argument is that there is going to be a false flag. And now he's blaming the TTSA group as being a front for this effort to have a false flag effort to start a war with the ETs. And I think that many people in the UFO community would probably agree with him. TTSA, like Stephen Greer, was a messiah thing where everybody jumped on the bandwagon with Tom DeLonge after the New York Times thing, and then it got chipped away, and now a lot of people will have nothing to do with Tom DeLonge. So these are things where they go up and they go down. People come, people go. Now, my position on this false flag thing, because I'm sort of similar, but I do not believe it's going to be a false flag. My position would be, how long can you keep the false flag going? I mean, you can build it up and use the threat thing, but once you decide you're going to start a war, how long is this really going to last? I've been playing this game for many, many years, and I would see it not so much as a false flag, but just an attempt to get money. I was actually reading some of the emails from Ron Pandolfi, who is I remember the day TTSA went public, I contacted Dan Smith, who was his sort of spokesman guy, unofficial spokesman. And Dan said that Ron had said there's a total techno scam, and all these guys, I know all these guys, and they're Scientology techno scam, and they're ripping off people. They used to rip off billionaires. Now they're ripping off, going to try to rip off Congress. And so I was actually looking at some of his emails today, and this is basically what he was referencing, and that was what he was saying from day one. What I say, and I guess I sort of agree with Stephen Greer on this, is that the whole idea is to scare the living daylights out of Congress. And it's almost like a basic business, basic free enterprise. Create a need and fill it. That's what business is all about. So you create this huge need. We got these evil aliens who are going to eat us, or whatever they're going to present as a scenario. And I'm the Messiah. I will save you from this if you give me suitcases full of money. And Congress has no clue what's going on and is very easily frightened. And the other thing that's happening is you see a lot of people are that are pushing this agenda are saying to put pressure on congressmen. So the congressmen have got pressure from people on the street, and they go along with it, and they're going to get this money. That's what, to me, it is. So it's not so much a false flag. It's not so much that they really need to start the war. They just need to pretend they're going to start a war, or that we need to have a war, or we have some evil Chinese or Russians or Mexicans or whatever the scenario is. And the latest version of it is evil aliens. So it's a religious Christian idea that there are good and, there's good and there's bad. We, of course, are the good guys, and if you're in the military-industrial complex, you need to point out, as they do with the daily briefing with the president every day, pages and pages and pages of threats around the world. This happened here, and this is going to be a threat, and we need to deal with this, we need to deal with that, and this goes on for pages and pages, and it, the president sees this stuff every day. So it's not so much that they're necessarily going to start a war. I mean, if they really do claim they know something, they know it's going to be over real fast. The intelligence will basically neutralize, de-neuter the military, and it'll all be over within minutes. This is not some third world country that we're up against here. So it is a simple move to me that what's going on is they're going to move the money from the little guy who pays the taxes up to the military corporations and the rich people who do not pay taxes. It's a simple thing. It's always worked that way. There's a lot of money in war. There's a lot of money in the military. And these contractors, in military-industrial complex contractors and companies charge huge money. I can give you the example that Bob Bigelow talked about, that Bob Bigelow was buying his first rocket he bought from the Russians. And of course the interviewer asked him, well, why would you buy it from the Russians? That doesn't make any sense. And he had actually bought the rocket that had the missile that was destined for Las Vegas. And he said, well, you have to, you can't buy it in America. And the guy said, well, why not? He said, well, because when they took all the nuclear missiles out of Russia, Russia doesn't have the big company situation we have here, so they just resold the rockets to different people and reused the rockets. Instead of using them for nuclear weapons, they used them for other things, launching things into space. And according to Bigelow, the American contractors, you are not going to sell used rockets in the age of Boeing and Lockheed and all these different things. You only buy new rockets, so they take the old rockets and they drove over them with bulldozers, and that's why you had to buy it from the Russians. So that's the whole thing. It's all a money game. It's all about making money. So the aliens are just the latest version of somebody that we need to be afraid of, so that we can have money for research. Now, during the Obama administration, it was the word was commercial airline traffic. That's what Leslie Kane put in her book, which was forwarded by John Podesta. And now in the Greer video, he shows Leslie Kane talking about the threat. So in her book, she talked about commercial airline traffic as being the reason why we should do the investigation. And now that's moved to this thing with the threat that the airline traffic thing didn't work. And I think everybody knows that the idea of using a threat is to get money, that you're not going to, it's a no-brainer. You're not going to get anything unless you create some sort of need, unless you create some sort of threat. So you create the panic while waving the flag, and next thing you know, you've got suitcases full of money and you walk away. That's how the military got to be a $730 billion budget. Huge amounts of money. So I'm really not sure that because Stephen Greer puts out a documentary that suddenly the people are going to be convinced that we need to cut the military budget. The military has learned how to increase its budget and move it up every year and increase the threats and increase the fear in the people that are funding this whole thing. And the people on the bottom that are, you know, working 9 to 5, just keep paying their taxes and keep this thing going. They've been selling fear forever. I mean, they sold it in World War II with the Japanese and the Germans, and then it was the Russians, and then it was the North Vietnamese, and now, you know, it's the Mexicans, and now it's the Chinese, which is a really stupid idea, almost as bad as the alien. We have this idea that China is the big threat now, and yet you take a look and you see how many military bases does China have outside China? One. The United States has 800. So the idea is suddenly the Chinese are going to invade. It's pretty hard to invade with one base outside your country. You have no supply lines. You have no place to launch. You're running bombing missions on the other side of the world. It's total nonsense, but people have bought into this thing that the Chinese are this threat. And it's the same as the alien thing. You hype it up, and you just keep repeating the lie, and everybody believes it. And next thing you know, you've convinced people. And once you get it in there, as I'll mention in a minute, with Eisenhower said, once you get the thing rolling, it's pretty hard to stop it. The intelligence behind the phenomena has been here for thousands of years, and the idea that is being presented now rather than this sort of false flag, I think, is the idea where we need to create a threat. So the intelligence has been around for thousands of years, and now suddenly we were meant to believe that in the last couple of years, suddenly they've increased in number, and they're about to attack the military, and they're suddenly now a threat. The bottom line to that is that if they've been around here for thousands of years, nobody owns the airspace, but if anybody owns the airspace, it's their airspace, and we should get out of their airspace. We're playing these games of just making up rules, and if you can see from what I'll talk about at the end, they're basically running the show. So we better get that in our mind and understand that this is not something, it's not a third world country we're going to push around here. The idea that they become a threat is totally a joke. But for those people who are spend their careers pushing fear to get dollars for defense, this is just the latest sales pitch. And they've got a $730 billion defense budget. They know how this thing works. And I'm not really sure you're going to turn around this growing industry that Eisenhower warned about in his last speech before leaving the presidency. Now, one of the funny things I noticed that Greer did make an attack on Jim Semivan and the CIA people on to the Stars Academy. And the thing is, he's friends with Ron Pandolfi. Ron Pandolfi is the guy who briefed Jim Semivan on UFOs when he left the CIA. And the way when I first discovered Jim Semivan in 2016, I brought it up. And Ron's claiming through Dan Smith that Semivan didn't exist. And then the second claim was, well, he did exist, but that's not his name, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm wondering, why is Ron Pandolfi denying Jim Semivan? And the whole thing came out to that maybe Semivan is actually working for Ron Pandolfi, and that Ron is behind this whole thing. So it was kind of weird. And we know, we actually asked Ron Pandolfi in a online news conference whether Stephen Greer was vetting his material through Ron Pandolfi. And so there was, Ron yelled out, he was in the background, he yelled out, "What stuff?" And then Sid Goldberg from Gaia, who had asked the question, just repeated the question again, and there was complete dead silence, which seemed to answer the question. So it's kind of always amazes me where he's attacking the CIA on the TTSA, But the top guy, who is been around since 1983 and has been interacting on UFOs for the CIA that whole time, and basically at one point stated his job was to obfuscate. I can't remember what the exact word was, but it was something like that, to obfuscate. That this guy is one of Stephen Greer's sort of main contacts, and yet he's got this thing with the CIA. We've got to realize all these people are in the same operation here. It's really not that simple to understand all these games and who's playing what. We always got to remember that they've been doing this for so many years that we're amateurs in terms of trying to understand what the motives are and how they run disinformation operations and who's doing what and who's got the money. So Stephen Greer was, you know, attacking assets such as Tyler D, who's, you know, a NASA guy who's got the CIA connections, and Green and Semivan and Putoff, who ran the remote viewing program for the CIA and stuff like that. And yet, when it seems like it, when it suits his benefit, Steve uses basically the sources from the CIA. I think he even said that, I think his impression was that Ron had actually saved his life at one point by doing whatever. Now, one of the things I think that he left out, that was, he probably doesn't watch my stuff, but he had some lines from Tom DeLong, sort of putting down Tom DeLong. The main line that Tom DeLong used that fit right into this documentary is one that he didn't use, and that was in 2016, the audio clip of Tom DeLong saying, "You know what my advisors say when they talk, when they look at each other? They say, what a wonderful recipe for war." That's what they say. And that's Stephen Greer's main point, but he didn't use that audio. I think it would have been very effective in this documentary. Now, as I mentioned before, we have a situation where Eisenhower warned about this whole thing, this idea of the military-industrial complex. So I'm going to read three paragraphs, the actual, everybody always does the last paragraph, but I'm going to read three paragraphs of the last speech given by President Eisenhower. And you got to remember, President Eisenhower was a five-star general. There aren't even five-star generals anymore. So he was very, very powerful, knew how the military worked, knew how all this operation worked. And his last speech in before leaving the White House, he actually warns about what we're seeing going on right now. "Until the latest of our," this is Eisenhower talking, "until the latest of our world conflicts," and he's referring to World War II and Korea, "the United States had no armament industry. America, makers of plowshares, could, with time as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armament industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women directly engaged in the defense establishment. We annually spend on military security alone more than the net income of all United States corporations. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large armament industry is new to the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, and even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together." So Eisenhower did give this warning, and this is my main thing, is that this is just this increasingly powerful military-industrial complex where there is no end. Sheehan talked about in the documentary, and Sheehan sort of is, I think, put in a bit of a difficult position by this documentary in that he doesn't agree with this false flag thing, and yet for the first part of the documentary, Stephen Greer plays Danny Sheehan talking, making his point about this false flag thing. So Sheehan talks about he doesn't sort of agree with the false flag thing because he believe, or the alien thing is because he said the military-industrial complex will use up present enemies first. I, however, think it was more likely that the military-industrial complex will play them all at the same time, which would mean more money. So we bring in Chinese and Europeans and Russians and Mexicans and whoever, you know, and add aliens on top of it. Why would we just pick one when we can, you know, go every day with a new one here and a new one there? Everyone is worth some money. So I think my position is that they would just add aliens to the top of the list of all the other enemies that, that we have, and all the potential threats, which is the word that's always thrown around, to which I say, I mean, what is there that the military-industrial complex does not consider a potential threat? Everything's a potential threat because every potential threat is worth some bucks. I actually would think that you could raise much more money for China than aliens, because China is a very sort of thing that most people know. Aliens, I'm not sure a lot of people are going to believe the aliens, but the Chinese, they've replayed this card over and over again, and people are really starting to buy into this thing that the Chinese get up every morning and try to figure out how they're going to screw the United States of America. The weird thing about that is, as I said many times, is that our enemies change from year to year. So it used to be the Japanese, and then the Japanese started making cars, now they're good guys, and the North Vietnamese were the only good gook was a dead gook, and now they make Nike runners, so now they're good guys, and we work with them. And the weird thing was that during one of the big negotiations with Jimmy Carter in fighting with Russian aggression in Europe, Jimmy Carter offered advanced weapons to China. So they're playing China off against Russia, and now suddenly we're doing exactly the opposite. We're playing Russia off against China. Now, Danny is sort of in both camps, and this is where he's sort of in a difficult position in this, because a lot of people are asking him, how can you be Lou Elizondo's lawyer and then also be defending Stephen Greer when they really don't see eye to eye on anything? And I think the situation with Danny is Danny wants people to talk. So he's in both camps, and he wants everybody to talk rather than get into pitted battles. So he's willing to talk to everybody. And you can see that with what he's doing. He's dealing with the defense inspector general, and he says he's never met, you know, like anybody in the lawyers in the military-industrial complex who he would trust, or the military-industrial complex, and yet he's still dealing with them. And he believes that you have to have conversations, you have to talk, even if you don't trust the other side. So this is where we'll let Danny describe, you know, being in the movie and sort of having Stephen Greer make his case with Danny's words. Now, one of the things he brought up in the movie, I thought was very telling, and that was General Wesley Clark. This is a point I brought up as well. General Wesley Clark talked about the Iraq War being pre-planned. And we also know that from Canada. I'm from Canada, that David Fromm, who was a Canadian, his mother was a big radio broadcaster here, was a speechwriter for President Bush. And he had, according to his book, after he got fired, had written the book and had talked about the fact that the head speechwriter had come to him and said, find a justification for war. And he'd come up with the famous Axis of Evil speech, you know, the Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. And then his wife put it on email that her husband had come up with this famous line that President had used in his speech. And of course, he was fired on the spot because, of course, he didn't say that. The president said that. And yet it was, the whole idea was he was to have this idea they wanted to go to a war in Iraq. And that's this whole idea, is that war is money, and the more the better, and the more money we make. Now, Ron had called this techno scam right from the word go. The whole idea was that they really don't have anything in terms of UFO technology. They're making this claim that we need this, that the Russians may have this, the Chinese are working on it, and we need this kind of stuff, and we need the money or whatever. And Ron had always made the statement that these people, the same people, well, his claim was the same people had been ripping off billionaires, and then they ran out of billionaires who wanted to get into crazy schemes instead of pay their taxes, and now they're going after Congress. So that was his position. But I was looking at some emails, and he basically, there's a couple of funny things that he wrote that I'd like to sort of read from some emails that he was sending around. In terms of talking about what's going on, he said, it's a matter of perspective. From my perspective, things are exactly as they seem. For those who have been deceived, they are not. For many, I am afraid there may be more self-deception than directed deception. The videos that were handed to Mellon in a brown paper bag in the parking lot, and then he puts in brackets how porn is traditionally distributed at the Pentagon, are fake. Mellon appeared to be honest about how he received the videos, although as a former undersecretary, he should have been expected to know the difference between declassification, public release, and porn distribution. He did not question why there was no classification or declassification markings, nor did he question why there were no manifest or other documentation with his acceptance. He just took them to the New York Times and reported he received them at the Pentagon, not bothering to mention that he got them via traditional porn distribution process. Motivations are different because there are loons, crooks, and worse. Each group has a different motivation, has different motivations. The crazy loons are generally unaware of the larger fraud, and I was called a loon by him. The crooks are a bit smarter, aware of some fraud, yet unaware of the larger strategic deception. The worst are broadly aware of the strategic deception and driving the fraud. Even for a great man like Jack Sarfatti, who understands physics, it is difficult to detach entirely from the fraud without understanding the strategic deception. Now, he mentions another one later on, which is kind of, I found interesting, but I will mention that later. But let's get back to Greer. So that's Ron Pandolfi, who has been from CIA for since 83, rumored to be the guy that may brief the president on the subject, is a high-level guy who has been involved. I'm not sure how the CIA gets involved with public people, because they're supposed to be foreign intelligence, but that being as it is. One of the things I didn't agree with Steve, well, I've never agreed with Stephen Greer on, and there's a point he makes in the movie, is that we have all this technology. And this is what Ron Pandolfi is basically saying. This is like techno scam. We really don't have anything. It's just this idea that we're flying this stuff around. And I think much of that is military and intelligence bravado. It's the idea that we've sealed the deal on UFO technology. 50% of the stuff's flying around is ours. We won the war in Vietnam, and every country we've invaded just loves us. And it's this put-on thing where they may have some. In fact, Lou Elizondo gave a speech in Brazil where he talked about, he figured that we had 20 years. Within 20 years, we will have the UFO technology, that they'd actually discovered the mathematics behind some of the UFO stuff that they'd done at ATIP, some of the analysis, and that they had used CERN and other places to actually do some testing and confirm the mathematics. Now, the question to that is, if we're going to do this whole thing where Lou Elizondo says, well, we need more data, the big question is, who is we? Is that the people on the street? Does anybody know what that mathematics was? Have they told anybody? No, that's all classified. It's all going to be military intelligence, all military to build weapons. The key is, are we just here to pay taxes, or are we here to be helped by this kind of stuff? And the same goes for the entire thing. If you take a look at the whole story of the briefing of the Senate, of the whole TTSA operation, what do we know now that we did not know? The only thing we really know that we didn't know before is that the Senate is now in the loop, everything is secret. Nobody's telling anything of any, nobody's saying anything about anything. You don't know anything more than you knew before. It's always non-disclosure agreement that's classified or whatever. It's still completely secret. Now we just have another level. We have the senators who are now saying, well, I can't talk about it. It's secret. And when is this technology, when is this stuff that we discover that we are all to put pressure on the government, when are we, the real we, going to learn what's going on, how the mathematics work? Or are we going to have a bunch of people sitting in the background who are trying to get patents and trying to make money on this thing inside the military industrial complex, inside Lockheed and Boeing and all these sort of places that they keep it away from the general public until these guys are got all the patents locked up and made a lot of money, and then maybe we'll let some stuff float down into the public. The public is paying for it, and I don't see any indication that the public is going to be told anything. I mentioned this before, Greer deals with Pandolfi, who it's kind of weird because Pandolfi did say Q existed from QAnon. And so you may have a situation where he is actually Q, and the stuff that has been placed on the internet is just garbage that Ron and other people are throwing into the, as I say, throw mud in the water. That's how you distract this whole story, is nobody knows who to believe or what to believe. They are people who have done this for 70 years. They know exactly how this operation works. And we're stuck in the situation where we really don't know what's going on. We're just supposed to cheer on people who claim that they're going to get answers. And yet, as far as I see, no answers have actually been given to the population. Now, the other thing I sort of disagree with Steve is about abductions. Steve has, I think probably most people disagree with him on abductions. I sort of agree with most people on abductions. I maintain there's an event, but it is not what people think it is. And I would use as support the fact that Edgar Mitchell agreed with that the abduction scenario that people claim is happening is not happening. Jacques Vallée claimed that. Kit Green claimed that. If you go to all these high-level people, go right to the top, they all seem to be claiming that. Now, I'm going to be doing an interview in the next little while with David Perkins. Now, David Perkins is one of the two or three top authorities in the world on cattle mutilations. And I think he and I see the situation the same. I'll sort of keep it until we do the interview. But we'll go down the route as to what may actually be going on with cattle mutilations and abductions. And it's completely different than what Stephen Greer has. He has the military. And again, this is military bravado, I believe, of people that are, or disinformation, that are feeding him material that we've got little aliens that we create in factories, and they're robots and they're abducting people. Abductions occur all around the world. I don't think there's any way we can believe that the U.S. military is running around to China and all these countries and abducting people and doing all this kind of stuff. Again, this is just sort of an idea where they want us to think they've got it under control, or as what happened, I think it was the 1997 briefing that Stephen Greer gave, the one main witness who was going to talk about this situation where they were doing the abductions pulled out of his testimony. He was going to testify under oath about 10 minutes or 5 minutes before he was to testify. He suddenly claimed to have gotten a phone call and they were threatening him and he had to pull out and he disappeared. So it went all the way to the top and everybody was believing this was going to happen. And then conveniently a couple minutes before, this guy left and never reappeared. And yet that story continued on. But I think a lot of it's based on what that one guy was going to testify, that we've got, you know, crafts and we're running around abducting people and mutilating cattle and we're doing all this kind of stuff. I have grave doubts. And when you see the interview I would do with David Perkins, we're going to go to the edge in terms of, I think we see it the same way. It's completely different idea, gets into consciousness, and it will explain why nobody's really been caught doing cattle mutilations, why nobody's ever seen abductions. There is an event, but it may not be the event people think it is. People want to believe this physical world, nuts and bolts world. It may not be that simple, or as I've always said, the UFO phenomenon is 1,000 times more complex than people think it is. So you have a situation where, you know, Mitchell, Green, Vallée, all these guys saw it differently and started to bring in consciousness. And once you bring in consciousness and this participatory world, there are other options that seem to fit the data better than idea that we've got. We're creating little aliens in factories and running around and abducting American citizens. The injury thing. Should I get an injury thing? Let me think. This whole idea that they're injuring people. Green talked about this with Kit Green talked about this with Jim Peniston, where he said at that point he had 50 witnesses, and then Peniston said, "How many of these witnesses are still alive?" And he said, "Just you and Burroughs." So the idea that was putting out was that if you got within, I think it was 500 yards of a UFO, you were toast. They were going to put this thing in your brain, this sort of a thing in your brain, and you'd last 5 or 6 weeks and you'd be dead. And the only people still alive were Burroughs and Peniston, and this idea that these evil aliens. But I would venture to tell people I was within a couple of feet of one of these things. 1976, I had no adverse effect. And this is where you get into this thing where we're going to be talking about David Perkins. You have to start looking at the witness in terms of, does the witness have any influence on what's going on? Or is this a random where, in this a cork going down a stream, and there's all these evil forces around us that are influencing us, and we're victims, and the referee's pulling for the other side, and things are unfair. The other one I would bring up is the case of 1967 of Stephen Mikulak, who was abducted just at the time of the Six-Day War, where nuclear weapons were going to be involved in the Six-Day War, which is a documentary or a podcast I'll do later on. And Stephen Mikulak was actually encountered a UFO at Falcon Lake, Manitoba, near where I live. And you see that he was injured, but he lived. He lived for another 35 years or whatever after the event, maybe even longer than that. And you see that he had this really weird burn. And it was the only case that I've seen where that kind of burn took place, where it would rise up and then it would go away. And then a year later it would come back, and it kept reappearing and stuff like that. It was a very paranormal type thing. And the craft had landed, and it comes to this theory of wow thing, where they landed, they opened up the door. They really didn't do anything. They were there. And he went and told this story about this encounter with the phenomena. But you can see that you can be very close to a UFO, and it depends maybe whether you've got a gun or what your intention is as to whether you get injured or not. You even have this situation where I think George Knapp had said at Skinwalker Ranch, those that were the most aggressive to the phenomena had the worst experiences. So I'm going to be doing this interview with David Perkins. I think it'll be very interesting. I think we're on the same page. We see this from a different perspective, which I think is where we have to go with this UFO phenomena. It's not as simple and it's not as materialistic as people think it is. Now, the ET thing is, I guess, where I also disagree with Stephen Greer and probably everybody else. There's more and more people coming across to the idea that this thing may not be as ET as people think it is. Anybody who says this is definitely ET, give your head a shake. Are you stupid? I would ask them to tell me 1895, 1896. There was thousands of UFO sightings in the Western United States with wooden ships flying around with propellers and sails, and this is going on, and they were up. They had these big battery, these big lights that were not possible at that time in order to get the kind of light that they were getting. And the people that were flying those ships were asked where they were from, and they said, "We flew in from Mars." So my question is, if you are absolutely 100% assuring me that this is extraterrestrial, did those guys fly in on wooden ships from Mars in 1895 and 1896? The Canadian government and the CIA did the channeling in 1959 at the place where they did all the analysis of the U-2 and the SR-71, I'm forgetting what the name of the building is. Anyway, where they analyzed the U-2 and SR-71, they did a channeling there with an alien by the name of Alpha. The Canadians dealt with him. There was all sorts of people dealing with this alien, and there was another one by the name of Tyla. But Alpha was the main guy, And Alpha claimed he was from Uranus, which is like 300 below zero, and it's like a gas planet. And I remember the Canadian government metallurgist telling me, let me make one thing very clear, Grant. At no time did Wilbur Smith running the program or I ever believe Alpha was from Uranus. So people who say this is extraterrestrial, answer me the question. Was Alpha from Uranus? Adamski, when he had this first sighting, Adamski and all the 1950 contactees said the beings told them they were from Venus and from Mars and from the moon. So if this is ET, is that correct? Were they actually from Venus, Mars, and the moon? Ganymede is a big one. There's a lot of stories about Ganymede having bases, aliens having bases on Ganymede. Well, Ganymede, again, is like 200 below zero. And anybody who's been even in 50 below zero, I mean, would realize that there's very little chance that anybody's going to live there or want to live there. We go to the Pleiades. Here's a story. If you say ET is actually where they're from, they're actually from Pleiades. The question is, why would the aliens use the word Pleiades? We understand it as Pleiades because we have very limited knowledge of what's going on. So we see seven stars and call it Pleiades. There's actually 800 stars in the Pleiades star system. So why would the aliens use the word Pleiades? They would use one of the, they would a star in that system, but they're using words that interact with our words. They're going into our head. They're seeing what we think, and that's what they're saying. Ron Johnson, who's an experiencer in Utah, I've asked him just recently. I said, Ron, you've had all these experiences since 1960s. You've written all this down. You've documented all this stuff. Did they ever tell you where they were from? And he said, I have asked them many, one being that he deals with, LB. I've asked him many times. They will never answer the question. So if they're ET, why don't they just tell us where they're from? There's something more complex going on. Or when I talk to people on that have claimed to have been on board the ship, I always ask them, do they have any clothes? And they'll always say, no, they don't have any clothes. Or they have a uniform, they're all wearing the same uniform. Did they have sex organs? No, I've never had anybody say they had sex organs. Don't have belly buttons. Most of them really don't have a mouth, nose, or ears. And I always say, well, don't you think that's kind of strange that they would have this? And then I always ask the question, did they ever get any older? I've never had anybody say they got older. They always, Betty Andreasen's husband said 1946 till now. No, never got any older. And this is, 80 years in between the two. The beings will always, the ones that do reply, I had the ones in London that I was interacting with, the woman that was dealing with them, said, we've always been here. You are the visitor. And this comes into this airspace thing that we say, oh, they're interfering with our airspace and they're intruders and all this kind of stuff. Well, if they've always been here, which you'll hear over and over and over again, people will say, no, they don't come from anywhere. They've always been here. If they've always been here, then it's their airspace and we're the visitor and we're the ones that should leave the airspace. If we think that somebody should stay out of the airspace, that someone owns it. Nobody owns the airspace, but they've always been here. Nancy Tremaine, I asked her, helped her write her book, helped her publish her book, and she said, she asked them, because I asked them, and she went and asked them, and said, we are not alien to this or any other planet. And this idea that they're etheric beings, they can take on whatever body they want. Sherry Wilde was told hers from Andromeda, and then the publisher pointed out it can't be from Andromeda. He's a gray. He has to be from Zeta Reticuli. She went back and asked him, are you actually an alien? And are you actually an ET? And he said, no, that would not best describe who I am. I'm an etheric being on a mission through the cosmos for the creator, something to that effect. Yossi Ronan, an experiencer out of Israel, talked the same thing. When he asked, and they said, no, we aren't. We're etheric beings who, when we come into the physical world, can take on any shape, any body we want. And you can do the same thing, you just don't realize it. So we believe that we're alien. We believe they're humans. We believe they're aliens. Everybody's an etheric being and they can take on these bodies. And they just understand how to move from one to another. We think we're locked into this one thing. We just have an illusion about how the world is actually working. So despite the fact that senior military people, according to Mellon and Elizondo, are saying there is no threat. People are still talking about this potential threat. So and as I said before, military industrial complex will consider everything a potential threat. This is just fear to create a situation where money is going to be handed over and to do more weapon creation. Semivan was asked who's running the show. He said they are. So Lou Elizondo left TTSA saying he was going to second gear. As Congress got ready to demand a report from the Pentagon, Elizondo said there was a plan. Actually, in our last disclosure panel that I ran, someone brought up the fact that he had mentioned going into third gear. So I think what you got to remember with all of this stuff, whereas I guess Stephen would agree. I mean, it's been going on. They've been planning this a long time. But I would think the plan is more for the money, for the research purposes, in terms of trying to get it out of the stovepiping where they can put it in front of ordinary scientists and get answers. The problem is it going to be behind the wall with the Invisible College, or are we going to learn anything? I would bet you it's going to be behind the wall, that you're not going to see anything. There's going to be a bunch of money. You may get a little rinky-dink report as to what's going on, but I would say that this is going to be used for patents and for weapon development, and that is why it's in front of the Armed Services Committee rather than where Podesta wanted it, and that is the Offices of Science and Technology Policy inside the White House. It's in front of the Armed Services, and if it's there and they put up the money is going to be used for weapon research. I will predict you will not see a single experiencer at the hearings. Now, this one congressman from Indiana, Democratic congressman, has again said he's going to have hearings. I will absolutely predict you will not see a single experiencer in front of that Congress. There's even at our last panel discussion, we had a stunning statement where someone stated that experiencers interacting with the intelligence should stand down, that they should not get involved in this, and that they will hurt the cause. And it's like, if you're a military guy who says there's a threat, and that's a witness that needs to go in front of Congress. But if you happen to be an experiencer and you're dealing with the intelligence, we don't want to hear that's too woo-woo, and we don't want to hear that kind of stuff. We're just interested in threats and technology. So you're going to have a situation where you have Bob Salas, who was in the, if we're going to do nuclear weapons, he was in the silo with the nuclear weapons in 1967. Well, he's an experiencer. So we're now going to have a situation where we're going to expect him to go in front of Congress and testify, but do not mention the fact he's an experiencer. The same thing with Robert Hastings, who wrote the famous book on UFOs and nukes. Also is an experiencer. He's interacted with the phenomena. He believes that's why he's involved in this whole thing. And what we're doing here, correct me if I'm wrong, remind me if I'm wrong, but what we're doing here is we're cutting out the experiencer. We're cutting out almost everything. We just want to see, how does this thing fly? How does the technology work? Don't tell me why it's here. Don't tell me where it's from. All this kind of stuff. We don't want to know. Anybody who's interacting with the intelligence will be cut out of this situation. You will not be listened to. You will not be allowed in there. New York Times said, we don't want to talk about aliens. Senator Reid said the same thing. We don't want to talk about aliens. So if you want to talk about the fact that you've interacted with some being, you will be cut out of the process. The only witnesses you're going to see are military people who have been trained their whole life to be scared, to see everything as a potential threat, to shoot first, and ask questions later. Here's a funny one that I, if you're talking about experiencers, this is one that came through one of the correspondents. I just throw this in for fun. Ron Pandolfi, in one of the correspondents where he's on one of these chains where they're talking, someone asked, what's your thought about UFOs and other beings interacting with us? So Ron Pandolfi says this, my wife is one of them and she is perfect. And this is this whole idea that his wife supposedly is from the other side, came through the portal. So you see that kind of stuff, and then you go, well, are we going to cut Ron Pandolfi out of this thing? Is this, I mean, if he's saying this, I mean, and I don't think he's joking. I think he believes this. If she's actually part of this whole thing, are we going to leave that part of the story out of the UFO thing? Are we just going to do the materialistic paradigm where we're going to, you know, grab the aliens, put them on Indian reservations, grab their technology and make some money out of it? This is what it looks like we're wanting to do, is we just want to turn this into money and technology and do the materialistic world, when in fact the message seems to be that that's what's got us on the trouble and that's why they're here. And we're going to just keep the whole thing going and leave out the other components that may be more important than the technology. Again, this is going to be a move. Stephen says it's a false flag to start a war. I say it's just a move that will remove people of their money, people who see themselves as victims, and their money is going to be taken and it's going to be moved into this military-industrial complex. They believe the referee is against them in life. They're victims. The other team is cheating, and they're willing to give up their money in order to have someone that thinks that is going to save them. Nobody in the U.S. has ever been able to shut down the military-industrial complex. They know exactly how to play the fear game. Now, one of the quotes that Stephen uses is sort of sums it up, and it's been claimed on the internet that it's a false quote. But if it's a false quote, it's still a pretty good quote. And this is Stephen uses this quote from World War II from Hermann Göring, who was testifying at the Nuremberg trials. And some people say it was never in the trial transcripts, but it's still I think it's still a true sort of idea. How did you make the German people go along with all this, what the Nazis were doing? And he said, it's an easy thing. It's not anything to do with Nazis. It has to do with human nature. You can do this in a Nazi regime. You can do it in a socialist regime. You can do it in a communist regime. You can do it in a monarchy, and you can do it in a democracy. The only thing the government needs to make people into slaves is fear. And if you can think around something to make them scared, then you can get them to do anything you want. Now, even Eisenhower, who was a five-star general, was ignored. So I don't think anything's really going to change. This ball is rolling. And actually, Eisenhower warned about beware the military-industrial congressional complex. Congressional was taken out of the speech at the last minute because they didn't want to offend Congress. What we have now is Congress being put into the loop. Beware the military-industrial congressional complex. When you get everybody in the loop who's making money, you're never going to stop it. It just keeps going. It feeds itself, and it just gets worse and worse. Now, finally, I have no fear for the intelligence. Stephen Greer has this idea that we're shooting these things down, that the poor aliens. My opinion is that we really have nothing to fight with except words. I do not believe they're shooting stuff down. You can take a look at the stuff that is being shown, how the intelligence is playing this theory of WoW game, where they're interacting with the U.S. military, and they're basically getting right in their face. Why else would you drop from 28,000 feet to sea level in less than a second, unless you want to impress people? Like, watch this. Watch the technology we have. Semivan said they're in charge. You have these situations where these things came within inches of the plane. That's why they do it. In my opinion, is to show who's in charge. Look how close we can come to you. We know exactly what we're doing. I will say they're a lot less physical than people think it is. The idea that we're going to be trying to shoot this stuff down, this thing can appear, turn into a ball of light, go back, go into physical, go back into wherever they came from. You can even see with some of the situations that we're on, we thought we had this under control, went to Skinwalker Ranch, we had all these cameras set up, and when they had something happen on the one camera, they thought it would be picked up by the other camera, and then they went and looked, and all the wires were ripped down. There's no way. When they don't want you to film it, you aren't going to see it. David Jacobs tried this with the abduction thing, where they put cameras in people's rooms to catch the aliens when they were abducting people, and the people would just turn off the camera. They're always ahead of the game. John Alexander stated at Skinwalker Ranch, not only did they know what we were doing, they knew what we were planning to do. And you saw that again with the Nimitz, where they knew where the cap point was. They went to the cap point. Time and space may not exist. They can move into past, future. They can see what's going on. And that's where I always had this disagreement with people who have this religious idea about good and evil, is there's good aliens and bad aliens, and they're up in the sky and they're having a war. And I always used to say, this makes no sense. How can aliens have a war? If aliens are telepathic and they can see the future, how do you sneak up on the other guy? And if you can see the future, you know who's going to win the war. And if you're going to lose the war, why would you start the war? It doesn't make any sense. If you're telepathic and you can move into past and future, the concept of war seems to disappear. You really, it's pretty hard to do. Now, the military-industrial complex, I believe, is doing nothing more than leading young men to slaughter. If they think that they're going to take this intelligence on, they're going to shoot this thing down. I don't think they can do this. I think they're just going to try to get people to believe they can do it because they need the money. They need the research money. They want to research this. They want to get this technology because they want to be able to go through walls like happened at Skinwalker Ranch. They want to be able to appear, disappear, come out of portals. They want all this kind of stuff because it's military advantage. Bob Bigelow, for people who think that we are going to take this thing on, I remind you of what Bob Bigelow said in one of his recent interviews with George Knapp. He said, when I saw what they did to the government guys, I knew it was time to sell the ranch. And this is a story about these guys that were walking through there, these special forces guys, and they got the voice that said, leave, you are not welcome. And this thing followed them home, and they had all this paranormal poltergeist stuff happening. All their roommates moved out, and apparently it was pretty terrifying. And these are special forces guys. So anybody that thinks they're going to step in there, be big, tough special forces guys that you can see, or you see the thing with the all the reports about when they came in to the nuclear weapons thing, the guards, the people that were there, according to almost everyone, they were absolutely terrified. The one guy was in a fetal position. They couldn't get him out of the fetal position. They can make your world pretty terrible if they want. People think we're just going to take this thing on. Green mentioned this thing about 48 out of 50 guys dead. I always bring up the one with Stanton Friedman's files, where the first file I looked for was the Cuban one, where the Cubans decided they were going to shoot this thing down, and the front plane absolutely disintegrated. Once it locked on and tried to take this thing down, the plane just disintegrated, and it was all picked up by U.S. Navy intelligence. The Russians supposedly saying, do not engage. That apparently is the Russian stance, is to tell their military people, do not engage with this phenomenon. I guess they've lost so many planes. And then finally, and I'll leave it with this, Albert Einstein said, this is according to Frank Edwards, who gave a speech in 1956 in Detroit, and he stated that the UFOs were flying around Washington and they couldn't shoot them down, and they'll never be able to shoot them down, and that still Truman had given a shoot-down order. And that, according to Frank Edwards, Albert Einstein had gone to the president and said, Mr. President, anybody who can come across millions of miles of space will know how to take care of themselves once they get here. Don't start something you can't finish. Thanks for listening.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.